Hello and welcome to the IRPP's Interview with the Author series. Marthe Papillon is a professor at the University of Ottawa's School of Political Studies and the author of the IRPP study, Aboriginal Quality of Life Under a Modern Treaty, Lessons from the Experience of the Cree Nation of Iwuichi and the Inuit of Nunavik. Welcome, Dr. Papillon.
Hello.
The Crees and the Inuit of Northern Quebec were the first Aboriginal peoples to sign a modern treaty, the James Bay and Northern Quebec Agreement in 1975. What lessons can we learn from their experience?
Well, there's quite a few things, because the James Bay Northern Quebec Agreement was the first of its type, the first modern treaty, the first comprehensive land claim, and both parties, the government parties and the Cree and Inuit, were learning through the process. So it's been very much a learning process. And what is perhaps the most important lesson from this is that once you sign a land claim agreement, the negotiation process, the learning process, is not over. In fact, it's really much starting. Treaties like this are what I call living documents. They evolve with time, and both governments and the Aboriginal signatories have to be able to adapt to the changing circumstances, adapt the treaty to the changing circumstances. And that's what they've been able to do mostly in recent years.
In your study, you state that the Cree and Inuit communities have undergone significant changes in the past 30 years. Has their quality of life improved overall?
Well, yes, they have improved, and quite significantly. So that's the sort of good side of the story, the positive side of the story. The less positive side, or the more negative aspect, is that while it has improved, it's still lagging significantly compared to average Canadians, average Quebecers, but also compared to Aboriginal people living in southern communities in Canada. The life in the north is difficult, it's expensive, it's complex, and the economic situation is still very difficult in those areas. So obviously, the situation is not perfect, and the treaty in and of itself is no panacea for solving all the socioeconomic issues that are plaguing the communities.
What were the objectives of the agreement, and in which respects do you think it succeeded? And you've touched on this already, but maybe you can elaborate. In which respects do you think it failed?
Well, the success of the agreement, at least in my view, is the capacity of both the Cree and Inuit to build from the governance infrastructure that were created, that were in fact quite limited early on with the agreement, and develop these agreements, or transform these institutions of governance into mechanism and tools for them to take control over, for example, their education system, health system, so on and so forth. So basically taking control of these and making changes that were appropriate to their community themselves rather than being imposed by the government. So that's a positive step, obviously. Perhaps on the negative side, as I said, the socioeconomic conditions are still difficult, still very difficult. And also the overall implementation of the agreement, there's still a lot of disputes with the government. So the lack of formal dispute resolution mechanism is an important issue that hasn't been completely solved yet.
Can you give specific examples of aspects that have improved in your study? You talk about infrastructure, health, education. These are things that have gotten better.
Yeah, absolutely. The education, for example, it's interesting to mention that the level of education and the percentage of young Cree and Inuit that are actually completing high school and going to a post-secondary education has improved quite significantly. So obviously the education system, there are things that are working with, on the other hand, the overall level of education is still much lower than the average Canadian. So that's a concrete example of the sort of double aspect of this agreement. The same for health, the same for probably housing is the most difficult element, where housing situation in both Nunavik and in the Cree region is one of the worst in the country. So that's definitely an area where things need to be improved, partly because of the cost of building houses in the north and the government budgets that are not appropriate in relation to the costs.
Mm. Earlier you described this treaty and all treaties, I think, as living document.
Well, the idea of living document is basically that the governments, both the federal and provincial governments, tend to see land claim agreements, treaties, as legal documents that are basically contracts or land cession contracts, land transaction that are fixed and very much rigid, and you have to sort of interpret the treaty to the letter. Aboriginal people, on the other hand, tend to see treaties in much broader term. They are a bit, they engage, they create a relation with the government that is bound to evolve with time, so it's more organic. And this is what I mean by living document, is that both the government and the Aboriginal parties have to embrace this view of treaties as something that is evolving with time, changing with time, and adapting to the changing circumstances of the parties. A great example of this is with the James Bay Cree. When they signed the agreement, they were very much focused on protecting their way of life, their traditional way of life. So hunting and trapping and fishing were the key elements that they wanted to protect. Nowadays, with the growing demographic, the changing demographic of the population in Cree communities, they are much more focused on economic development and gaining access to economic development tools. So obviously the treaty has to evolve to embrace this new reality.